offstage and on the air, performance number 419. I'm Nick Mayo, along with offstage and on the air co-creator Lisa Sheps, playing the role of our engineer today. I'm also joined by my super special guest co-host for today, Keith Contreras McDonald. You're listening to KOOP HD1, HD3, Hornsby, and KOOP.org. Each week we take a look at theater from many different angles. If it's offstage and on air, if it's theater, it's offstage and on air.
The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up, feast your eyes on the wonders of this world.
Sundown on the creek, partly frozen, partly flowing. Must be windy, trees are bending. Junction 50, field needs mowing. Feels like the car is floating. Say something.
Hi, everyone. Today is Wednesday, 28th, 2017. On today's show, we have Zach Theater's production of In the Heights and City Theater's production of The Normal Heart. And of course, as always, we'll have lively discussions, including the news and views from the world of theater in Austin, New York, Los Angeles, Portland, Maryland, Kennebunkport, and Phuket.
It's kind of
stay with
hidden
us.
Hidden away, CD club for folks like you know.
So, Keith, did you know what that song was from?
No, I don't think so.
It just happens
what?
To
what?
Yes.
Shame on you.
Oh, I'm. I
shame
should be
on you.
I'm
you're
my
shame.
Musical
Get
theater education.
Lisa, do
you
know
are
what
shamed.
That song is from?
I do. It's from my favorite new musical.
Fun Home. Janine Tesori.
Oh, I
Lisa Krohn. Coming to
twice.
The Long Center in August.
Right. And I, you know, we're not allowed to compel anybody to do anything, but
that's a
dang fine musical.
How are you today, Lisa?
I am good. You're rocking solo here. I'm really just your engineer.
You know what?
I'm going to throw in a couple of things.
I hope you throw in more than a couple of things.
I'm hard to stop. But I'm good.
Yeah, you're good.
I missed you guys last week, but y'all did a great job.
Thank you for that. I feel like our listeners are watching us all educate ourselves on air.
That's true.
So I'm glad that you're back, and I'm glad to be here at the driver's seat. And I'm also super excited that my childhood dear friend, best of friends, Keith Contreras McDonald is here
as
co-host.
Yay.
Welcome,
yeah.
Keith.
Thanks, buddy. It's
Keith,
good to see you.
What are you doing in Austin?
Well, I got a little job at the Zach Theater doing Usnavi and In the Heights.
Wonderful. Well, we're going to talk about that and many things more. I'm glad you're here, Keith.
Yeah.
Also today, we have our wonderful friends from City Theater and their production of The Normal Heart. So say hi. Let's see who's in the room. We've got Lacey Gonzalez.
Hello.
Hi, Lacey. And we've got Carl Gonzalez.
Hello there.
Y'all share last names?
We do.
Wonderful. We've got Scott Papa.
Hello.
Scott Papa and Michael Galvan.
Hi, how's it going?
Awesome, awesome. Glad you guys are here.
Well, thank you.
Thanks for having us.
It's always nice to have our friends from City Theater here. So, there's a lot going on in the world of theater right now.
There is.
There's the summer heat kind of scorching things dry, post-Tony scorch.
PTS is what we call that.
We have our post-Tony scorch happening. So, let's talk about first what already has closed. My girl Glenn Close has closed Sunset Boulevard again. And Sweat, Lynn Nottage's play, Sweat, at Roundabout Close, starring Johanna Day, which is one that I think went a little early, and it's one of those casualties of the Tony Awards. They were really, really hoping that that one would last a bit longer.
Yeah, well, and as we learned, and we'll talk about later, even good Tony Award isn't necessarily going to get you, for a straight play,
of course,
the bump you need.
And that's just a frustrating thing, right? And I think we know how this is. You can have an artistic success, which I think Sweat definitely was.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
But not necessarily a success at the box office. So what do we deem as successful? I call that a successful run.
Say,
absolute success.
An incredibly successful.
You extracted some really good, a really good run out of that show, out of a really, really good play with really good actors doing really good work.
And
that's a lot of reallys.
And
it was really good.
It was really, and a lot of really female playwrights. Like to have Lynn Nottage, an African-American female playwright, represented the way she was, I think on all fronts, that was a success. So to that cast, we're sorry you went too early, but congratulations on a very successful run.
Right, and let's give a nod to the stage managers and the tech crew as well, please.
100%. Mm-hmm. The many, many men and women who helped put that together. Congratulations on a great run. So Sunset closed, Sweat closed, and Lisa, I know you're devastated about this, but a certain musical has announced that it's closing in December.
Well, but...
Meow!
Oh, yes. Okay, I thought you were going somewhere else. Devastated.
I know you're devastated.
Devastated. Absolutely. It's like...
It's only 6 months more of CAD.
The best.
That's like nothing.
So I lived in New York from 1977 to 1995, and Cats was playing practically the whole time I was there.
Wow.
And guess how many times I saw it? Goose egg.
That's because you're an intelligent woman. anyone in this room seen Cats?
No.
Yes.
I have seen that like movie version that they released of the live one, and that almost turned me off.
That movie version was the original cast.
Right.
I forgot the that they filmed
version.
That.
The recorded version, I guess. Yeah.
Well, I love the New York Post going, the first Broadway production of Cats was a smash hit that ran for 18 years. This revival, not so much. I'm like, you snarky New York Post.
Well, it doesn't serve them right. You know, they didn't, it's not a new production.
No, it's not.
They just redid the old production.
Yes, but, you know, in the vein of keeping it positive, it kept many dancers, actors, stage managers, stagehands employed.
Makeup artists.
There's a couple makeup artists, Lisa.
There's a couple like young little Juilliard kids that went right out of the dance program into that show.
People's
first job.
Giving classical dancers and classically trained dancers a job as dancing felines is their mother's dream. Mm-hmm. When it closes on December 30th, it will have played a total of 609 performances. So if you have the hankering to...
Still respectable.
Very respectable.
You can win that lottery too. Like I, to be honest, I won it once and I didn't.
You like the lottery?
I'm probably like banned from the lottery because I did that, but I definitely won it. And then was like, I'd rather go out to eat.
Tell some of our listeners, Keith. For those of you, we'll get into Keith a little bit more. But not only is he a childhood friend, an incredibly talented actor, very versatile in many, many stage and screen. And but he, you also have been a New Yorker.
Yeah.
For since about as long as I have. What is a lottery? Tell our listeners what a lottery is.
So like a lot of the big shows, they used to, back in the day, you used to do that like student rush type lottery, and then everyone would go, and then everyone got hip to it and everyone was a student. And so they moved most of the lotteries online. I'm sure like a lot of listeners are familiar with like the Hamilton online lottery, but like almost every Broadway show has a lottery that they do that you like do online. And
that's a new
an
one to me, is the online thing. I remember having to go out and sit. Anyone sit in the rain?
Of course.
What did you guys sit in the rain for?
So
what did we sit in the rain for?
Exactly. We've done it many times, but I think the hardest one was when we waited 6.5 hours without coats for Hamilton.
Yay!
Oh, did you get in?
We got
but
in.
But you got
oh,
in.
Wow.
In February.
Nice.
So that was not fun. But
was it the like cancellation line you guys were sitting
in?
Yep.
Wow. Yeah. So no, I saw, I was just about to say, like, I remember like walking through Times Square, like after an audition or something, and I'm like, it's 20 degrees outside, and then there's people like who are popsicles next to Hamilton.
that was
these guys. Oh my god,
hardcore.
That is insane. Yeah, so I'm like in bed on the Hamilton lottery, like.
So the new thing is you can be in these lottery lines virtually. Amazing technology. So anyway, moving on from Cats closing, also a show, speaking of another female playwright and female director who won the best director this year, Tony Award for Best Director, Rebecca Teichman, who's phenomenal. And Paula Vogel's play, Indecent, announced that it was closing. What happened, Lisa?
It reneged.
It did.
Well, but amazing. There is so much talk about this because this is just not done.
It's
And their box office grosses for the past 2 weeks have been they've almost doubled their grosses.
41%. They were at 41% of the potential gross. So it went up from $277,000 to $377,000. So $100,000 increase in box office sales from the week after the Tony, after the director.
So, but we think that could be... So Daryl Roth announces the closing notice, so people rush to buy tickets.
Oh, sure.
So it could be the bump for that. But they're staying open till August.
And I'm
thrilled. I'm going to try to get up to New York to see it.
I am thrilled too. I mean, it's such an exciting thing. The New York Times talks about it, you know, this being something that in an almost unheard of renewal, the play the Winds Best Direction for Lighting Design and Decent extends its run and is staying open. So, I mean, well, can you imagine as an actor getting your closing notice and then having someone call you and be like, just kidding.
That would be cool. Well, some people are speculating that she's pulling a Scott Rudin and it was all fabricated. The closing notice and everything. If one is a conspiracy theorist.
Right.
There's no such thing as bad press.
Right.
That's true,
agree.
Except for when people do my laundry.
Yeah, right.
Nice.
Thank you. I'll be here all week.
Too much starch.
In a rare, almost unheard of move, the play's producers announced late Thursday that the production, which was set to close on June 25th because of poor ticket sales, would in fact stay open through August 6th at the Court Theater. So you guys have until August 6th to go and see this beautiful play by Paula Vogel, which won 2 Tony Awards. It was nominated for 3.
And to remind folks, this tells of the vaudeville story of a lesbian couple, and I believe it was the first kiss.
Mm-hmm.
The true story of the show itself was the first same-sex kiss on stage.
And there have been
romantic
many more
kiss.
Since.
There's been at least 4.
Wonderful. So anyway, there's a great opportunity to see this play if you'd like to. Also, there not just was Summer Scorch, there was also a summer opening. 1984. Mm-hmm. Anyone heard of this?
Of course.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You've heard of the novel?
Mm-hmm.
So it opened and got meow
interesting reviews.
Yeah, so those of you guys don't know, I'm not smart, I'm just reading this. 1984 is a dystopian novel published in 1949 by George Orwell. And this is a play version. And it was received kind of...
Well, it was received... It's very, very dark. In true Scott Rudin fashion, the day before it opened, he sent out a notice. They made nobody under age 13 can go see it because the interrogation scene is extremely disturbing. Ooh. And there's a lot of disturbing things, not only from a content, but they do a lot of technically disturbing things. There's a lot of quick blackouts. Just there's lights shining in the face of the audience. But
did they feel like a lot of 13-year-olds would go? So they needed to like, they're like, just
well,
in case it was like a family
like,
affair.
Would you take your 13-year-old
there? No, I just wondered like if they thought, well, after they go see Aladdin, they're going to go right to
1984. I think that was a Scott Rudin ploy to get a little tiny bump before
that
opening.
Well, that is a talented, talented man. He's a talented producer.
Well, yeah.
Speaking of that interrogation scene that he warns about, it's mentioned in the review, right? In the New York Times, he says, though I usually don't provide trigger warnings in my reviews, I feel obligated to do so here. The interrogations that Winston undergoes in the play's second half are graphic enough to verge on torture porn. So I think that's probably a continuation of Scott Rudin's sort of mystique that he's creating about come and see this crazy thing. But anyway,
I want to see it.
I want to see it too, though the review gave it tepid at best.
And I had a breakdown of several different reviews, which I don't have handy with me right now, but they were all basically tepid. There was really only one, and I can't remember the critic that liked it.
Yeah, it talks about it being a deliberately disorienting 1984, would seem to be trafficking in the same kind of titillating violence, which Big Brother keeps his populace both cowed and entertained. So, I mean, obviously we're doing this for, this is being produced for a reason, right? Some of the central themes in this piece are a world of perpetual war, an omnipresent government surveillance, and public manipulation. So, I don't know. Sounds
no 13-year-olds.
Sounds like
14-year-olds.
So now I had to read this in high school. So I'm a person of a certain age, and I remember when it came out. 1984 seems so far in the future.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing.
I'm 83. You're 84.
I'm 84.
Boy, you guys don't look a year under 79.
This is the radio. We're really attractive on the radio. We're really young.
Young and fit.
Yeah,
and
we're
tan.
We have like six packs. You just can't see it because
I have
radio.
I have a cleft chin.
Yeah, absolutely.
I have several six packs in my refrigerator.
So anyway, 1984 open. There's that. Also, Lisa, you put this one on. I want you to be able to chat about it.
I'm afraid. Is it Princess Di?
It is Princess
Di. You know
what?
I can't find the link for it. Well, but there's a Princess Di the musical that's got a very interesting cast attached
to it. You know why? I think I know why you put this on there. And I will... it makes me laugh a bit. Number one, the idea of it sounds a bit like, you're kidding, right? We're going to do a musical about Princess Diana. But then you read a little bit farther, and once again, my friends at the Post, who keep me giggling, not because of their journalistic excellence, but because of their snarkiness. So it says, the wedding was a fairy tale, the marriage a nightmare. The musical could be a smash. So Diana, this musical, is percolating this summer in New York Stage and Film at Vassar College, which is a place where a lot of new works are done. Mm-hmm. A reading of this on July 23rd is expected to draw Broadway producers eager to capitalize on the enduring fascination with Princess Di. The three-week workshop is being planned for the fall at the La Jolla Playhouse. Directed by this year's Tony Award winner, Christopher Ashley, who won his first Tony Award for Come From Away. This musical is the third collaboration for John Bon Jovi, keyboardist and composer David Bryan, and book and writer Joe DiPietro. So Joe DiPietro wrote Memphis.
Tony Award winning.
Tony Award winning.
Wonderful play.
I see why you're interested because of the...
It's got the right pieces.
It's
got the right pedigree here.
Right.
And Lisa, when you put that on there, I giggled and thought,
she found some random show.
I cannot go there with her. And then I read a little bit farther, and I see why there would be interest. It's very talented, very talented crew. And I also love this. The lyricist Joe DiPietro says, should the show come to Broadway in a year or so, you know, you should expect to see lavish sets and costumes. You know, this is a woman who used style and fashion to gain power. We're not going to skimp. So, if anything, we'll have a great costume parade for Catherine Zuber or William I Belong, hopefully, in Diana the Musical. I want to keep moving along because we have a lot of things to talk about today. Also, yesterday, the Jimmy Awards.
Oh, this is what I want to talk about.
Lisa, chat about the Jimmy Awards.
You go. Go. I'll just
tell me. I have no idea what that is.
You don't know what the Jimmy Awards are?
Yeah.
Ooh, shame on
you. This is the National High School Musical Theater Awards.
Oh. Did that exist when we were in high school? 45 years ago?
No.
I mean, I just recently graduated high school. I had no clue about it.
Really?
Yeah. When did you graduate high school?
I graduated in 2015.
Here in Austin?
No, in Arlington, Texas.
Okay, because Austin has its version called the Greater Austin High School Musical Theater.
Yeah, I recently heard about that one.
Did they do a national one? They do a national one. It's called the Jimmy's. Wow. Named after Jimmy Niederlander.
Like two of those, Nick.
I know. And the scholarships that they give out.
They should do retroactive Jimmy Awards for us.
I think they should. For like our rent and our Con Ed
bill. Show like videos of us when we're in high school.
So the Jimmy Awards are... like we said, this is a national competition. You submit. People from all over the country have the opportunity to come and compete for this scholarship program. And when they do, or when they're chosen from their local towns, Arlington, wherever, Texas, wherever, they're flown to New York and given Broadway master classes. And also
9 days worth.
I mean, just
these are individuals or companies?
Individual students.
Okay.
Ooh, individual students. So you send in your songs and your monologues, and you have a letter of recommendation from your teacher, and you go and you have community with other high school students on a national stage, and literally get to perform on a Broadway stage. Choreographed and directed by Broadway performers, having master classes for 9 days, and it accumulates in a big show and an award ceremony.
That's hosted great. This year by
Mr. Ben Platt.
Right.
Ben is a huge advocate, as we all are, for educational theater, and obviously has a gigantic following in the high school demographic because of Dear Evan Hansen.
There's a couple of things. First of all, on our website, offstageonair.com, there'll be a link to an article in the New York Times, which is one of the better articles I've read about the Jimmy Awards, and it has a lot of different interviews with folks, with some of the kids. It really gives you a layout of what it's done. But somewhere you can find it, I'm sure, on the YouTubes. 2 or 3 years ago, there's a wonderful documentary that shows the whole process. And it was, I think, the first or second year of the Jimmys. And it was amazing to see what these kids... the opportunities and the people that come and work with these kids, it's amazing.
It really is. It really, I mean, just speaking of that, what you said, Keith, like if something existed like this when we were in high school, it would have been what a treat to get access to this.
Well, I think, you know, when we were growing up, like, I know I felt this way. I don't know if you felt this way. There was no sort of national test of like how you fared until college auditions. Like you didn't know how you fared against
your peers.
Yeah, just or like, are we doing good work in San Antonio or are we just like
in our own
messing
bubble.
Around, you know? And it turns out, obviously, you and I were doing good work. We just didn't know until applying for colleges.
Exactly. And this is a, you know, they get industry professionals. This year it was Montego Glover, Rachel Huffman from Bernie Telsey's office, the producer Kevin McCollum, Tara Rubin, casting director, Bernie Telsey, casting director.
Great people.
Lisa Sheps,
superstar. So it's a really wonderful opportunity. And this year's winners, I just want to say their names out loud, are Sophia Dieler and Tony Moreno. So congratulations to Sophia and Tony on their win.
Both from the same, coincidentally from the same city of Orlando.
Isn't that strange? Some teacher educator down there is doing good work.
Yeah, yeah, educators. So those are different. They're from different schools.
Yeah. Shout out to their math teacher.
Right.
Science teacher.
Right. And their local radio station. Great. So I want to keep us moving forward. I want to touch on a couple more things in terms of our news going on around the world. Ryan Murphy, Boys in the Band. Heard of it? Ryan Murphy. Oh,
this is going to be incredible.
I'm so excited. I could hardly stand it. So for those of you who don't know, Ryan Murphy is the creator of Glee. And he's the creator of all these American Horror Stories and Feud, which has recently happened, is... looking to, he just optioned The Boys in the Band, which is Matt Crowley's pre-Stonewall play about a group of gay men who gathered for a birthday party and some wonderful banter.
And so, and I have, not burying the lead or anything, but I can't even give you the thing, but I had heard there's a certain star's name attached to it, and I can't remember who it is.
How I Met Your Mother, it's...
Oh, right. Well, it's Josh Radnor.
But what's his... Jim Parsons. Jim Parsons.
Jim Parsons, yes.
So Boys in the Band is obviously a gay icon, iconic film about groups of men coming together and friends of men coming together for a cocktail party that ends in political discussions, emotional discussions around the AIDS crisis. Something that might be familiar to you guys who are producing The Normal Heart.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's something to look for, The Boys in the Band. And obviously, you know what I love about Ryan Murphy is he's using his power and his money for good. He's not doing... he's doing material of great integrity.
So I absolutely agree with
that. I appreciate that in a huge way. So knowing that we have a little bit of time, my big choice right now, if I could be somewhere, if I could go... I would go to Chicago and I would see Amy Morton in her at Steppenwolf. I would go there. I would zoink myself up there.
Tell folks why and what it is. What is it?
So we had her on the radio show here, a local
we did.
Play about a transgender family and war and family and intimacy in a new society, and Amy Morton plays the mother.
Yeah, and I guess you should spell, because you're saying her, it's really here.
Yes.
H-I-R, which is a gender neutral pronoun.
Yes. So if I could be anywhere right now, I would zoink myself up to Chicago for the night. I'd have a giant pizza to myself, a beer, and I would go see Amy Morton.
Who's just one beer?
Beers.
Or one big one.
One giant one. And go see that. Also, just to give a little shout out to something that's happening locally, one of our Austin, Texas treasures, Jason Williams, production of Clear and Partly Crazy, was just at the Galveston Opera House.
We love our Jason.
So that's in development and going to be continuing to develop. Keep our eyes on that.
And we'll say that Austin Opera House does some incredible things. It's where Anne started.
It is where Anne started. So that's a little bit of a snapshot of what's going on. There's so many things going on. I know we have a little bit of time left in this. Does anyone have something that they're aching to see that they wish they could go and transport themselves? Get in your time machine and go. Get in your private plane and go.
Oh, man. I really, ever since I just heard about 1984, I really want to go see it. But
You better hurry.
Right. I know. find the money. Pull it. On the card.
No, so yours would be 1984.
Probably.
You'd zonk on up to New York. What about you?
I think it would have to be 1984 as well. Just hearing kind of
what's happening with the show itself. And then I know there have been a lot of injuries with actors.
There have been.
So mm-hmm. I would just be really interested to see what that looks like.
Are you over 13?
No, I'm 12.
You can't go.
All right, you guys. Well, when we come back, we're going to be talking to Lacey Gonzalez, Carl Gonzalez, Scott Papa, and Michael Galvan from City Theater's production of Normal Heart. So stick with us. We'll be back in just a minute. We're back. I am Nick Mayo here with creator of Offstage and On Air, Lisa Sheps.
I can't sing like you guys.
And special co-host for today, Keith Contreras McDonald.
Hey, hey.
I just also want to say we didn't give a shout out to our friend Nicole.
Oh, Nicole Shiro.
We miss you. We love you.
We have Nick to the first power here.
Nick
won. Nicole Shiro is in Houston, Texas.
She is.
Working on The Lion King.
Oh, nice.
Yes.
Zing-a-dong-a-zong-a-dong-a-dong.
Lisa, I don't know why your agent can't get you an appointment for that.
I've tried and tried.
You're perfect for it. You are perfect for it. So we are back. We're lucky to have our guests today from the City Theater and their production of The Normal Heart. Let's introduce ourselves. Lacey Gonzalez.
Hello.
Hello. Carl Gonzalez.
Hello.
Scott Papa.
Hello.
And Michael Galvan.
Hi.
Scott, am I saying your last name correctly? How do I say it?
That's close enough. It's Papa.
Papa.
Yep.
Wonderful. Wonderful. So tell me a little bit about the roles you play in Normal Heart.
I play Ben Weeks. That's Ned Weeks' brother. He's the only straight character in the play, actually. So. Mm-hmm. Which is interesting for me, since I'm the gay actor in the play. I'm one of the two or three of the gay actors in the play. Everybody else is straight, so yeah. So it's acting, yeah,
right.
So, but it's we've been having a lot of fun with rehearsals. It's a serious play. When it first came out in the '80s, it was more of a clarion call to action by Larry Kramer for people to pay attention to what was going on in the AIDS crisis. Nowadays, it's more of a memorial to those that we've lost, mm-hmm. and that's kind of how we've been approaching it as a cast. And I think how Lacey and Carl have been doing it as directors.
Wonderful. So, Lacey and Carl, you're the directors of the piece.
Yes.
Wonderful. I'm going to get to you in just 1 second. Sure. Michael, what role do you play?
So, I play Tommy Boatwright.
Wonderful.
And what he is to the whole situation is he was this this guy that just heard about this group, the Gay Men's Health Crisis, and you know, decided to just come to action and help out. And so he is pretty much the person who keeps everything together. Honestly, you know, because people going mad from, you know, just people not listening and things like that, and people just going crazy. He's the one that just kind of calms everybody down. He started the first emergency telephone hotline in his own, you know, living room, just picking up hundreds and hundreds of calls from people who needed information and couldn't go anywhere else. And so he was pretty much there for everybody. And, you know, I have never really heard about, you know, the AIDS crisis, you know, mm-hmm. being in school or anything.
And how
like
old
that.
Are you, just so our listeners
know? Oh, I'm 20.
No, you're 20.
Yeah, I'm 20.
So that is an age in which the AIDS crisis didn't touch you personally.
Nope. That statement is amazing.
Isn't it amazing?
To me,
it's it's very humbling.
Yeah, never heard anything about it until we started this play. And
so this piece is particularly important for your generation to know
yes.
your history.
Yeah, I've been literally telling everybody that this is just super informative because we've had like talks, you know, during rehearsal, like Scott has told us his experiences and, you know, I've watched documentaries and just done, you know, so much research and it's sad.
It's a wonderful thing, Scott, to have the two of you in the room to share that, to keep that information going and to continue the legacy and say these names and to know that this was a crisis that many of us dealt with, lived through.
Yeah.
I'm very interested, Lacey and Carl, what made you choose this? Obviously, we're in the end of Pride Month, so...
Can I disturb for one moment?
Yeah.
Can we just take this tangent we had...
Oh, I apologize.
Yes.
So, Michael, I believe you picked a number, and your number was...
Yeah.
33? So yeah. 33 is the winning number. Let's hear 33.
Hi, this is Sandra Bernhardt, and you're listening to Offstage on the Air on KOOP Hornsby, Austin.
Yay, Sandra Bernhardt. Thank
Sandra
you for that.
Sandra Bernhardt.
Thank you for that.
Good choice. I don't know that we've had her.
It's been a long
time.
Not,
we have not chosen her in a while.
So,
excellent choice.
Lacey and Carl, we were chatting a bit about why this. Obviously, it's the end of Gay Pride Month. And I say Gay Pride, which is now a dated statement to say Gay Pride. It is Pride. Lacey, Carl, what attracted you to this piece and why now and why in Austin?
I think the timing was right for it because we are at the end of the month that we celebrate Bright Pride. Today is the anniversary of Stonewall, I believe, mm-hmm. the Stonewall riots. So that was timely. We also experienced a loss. We lost a friend last year to HIV/AIDS. Mm-hmm. And we felt that this was the right time to pay tribute to him mm-hmm. and pay tribute to all the lives lost. And also kind of remind people, this particular situation might be somewhat resolved. It's not. It's still a problem. We still have to work through that. Mm-hmm. But there are other situations happening now in our political climate that need the same attention. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of, it is a call to action in a way to just stay vigilant and stay visible and to, you know, not be, what's the word I'm looking for?
Complacent.
Thank you. And to fight for what is right.
Mm-hmm. That's actually a really valid point. And one of the things that we need to understand about the AIDS crisis is it's still a crisis.
Yes.
There is no cure for AIDS. It has become a disease that is manageable, but we should not lose our sight on actually eradicating this disease.
Lacey, what was the statistic you pulled up?
I pulled up a statistic from the CDC, and in 2015, southern states accounted for 52% of new diagnoses of HIV. Mm,
southern states.
Southern states.
Southern states.
Including Texas.
I would be interested. I mean, obviously, the most obvious thing is a part of our culture is repression, and our I would be interested to know what are some of the other factors of that.
Yes.
Wow, that's fascinating. This is one of my favorite pieces for many reasons. Talk a little bit, guys, about the... it's so strange to say this sort of history aspect of this because it's odd to present this piece as a museum piece. How do you keep something that's historical and not... I guess you just answered the question, is you're choosing to show the immediacy of this piece.
The urgency.
The urgency.
It hasn't lost urgency in 30 years since he wrote them.
Exactly.
And it pertains to other situations as well.
We've played with the idea of what happens when good people do nothing. Mm-hmm. And I personally, and a lot of us personally, feel that that's a huge problem right now, is that as much as we want to speak out against certain people in higher powers, regardless of what you think, regardless of how you think, you don't say anything because it's not as easy as just sharing a Facebook post mm-hmm. or you don't want to upset family members. Mm-hmm. And that is like the prime example and prime reason why I feel like a lot of us are still oppressed in many, many different ways.
So what are the challenges in portraying that in your approach to this play and how you're doing it?
It's been a challenge only with having to deal with the material. I believe that the more we can educate ourselves about the history, about LGBT history, that we can take the problems that we're having right now when it comes to the LGBT culture, when it comes to Black and Latino culture, when it comes to Muslim cultures, and use what we've learned in this play and apply it to any other.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Great, great. I love that.
Sorry, I know I rambled.
No, you didn't. You didn't at all. You answered the question beautifully. I also think thinking about Larry Kramer is the playwright, right?
Yes.
And knowing that these characters that you play, how was it as actors knowing that these are not ideas, these are actual people who lived and who were part of ACT UP and part of GMHC, Gay Men's Health Crisis, who were there answering the phones? What is the responsibility of playing these people who actually put their stamp, their lives on the line for truth? How is that, playing a real person?
I mean, it's a huge responsibility. Mm-hmm. You know, for my character, I tried to find any information I could on, you know, what he did and things like that. And sadly, I found out that later down the line, he ended up committing suicide. Mm-hmm. Because of just, you know, growing old and just tired of it all and just didn't want to be in pain anymore. And, you know, it just, like I said, it's just a big pressure to portray him in his story and how he helped out with everything and things mm-hmm. like that.
Talk a little bit about the another perspective of I'm assuming that you lived through the AIDS crisis.
I did. I'm also a person of a certain age and, I lived through the beginning and where we are today. Back then, Larry's play was critical to get people's attention because it took 3 years for the White House to even acknowledge that AIDS was real. Mm-hmm. One of the lines that my character says towards the end of the play is, I understand they finally discovered the virus in Washington. Mm-hmm. That was 15 months after the French had actually made the determination that it was a virus and that we needed to combat it that way. I lost 90 friends to AIDS directly, and I've been to more funerals than I care to remember mm-hmm. over the course of my lifetime. And I gave a little advice to the cast when we were in the early processes. I told them to think of it as, think of your five closest friends, and then imagine losing four of them within 6 months' time mm-hmm. for no reason whatsoever, and nobody could help you. And then approach the characters as someone who's going through PTSD, mm-hmm. because that's what most of us were living with back then. It was shell shock. We didn't know what was going on, and we couldn't get any cooperation from the government. And Larry Kramer himself, through his art, is one of the people that's directly responsible for the availability of medications to combat AIDS and made it into a chronic condition today. So
And still fighting.
Still fighting.
He had a beautiful profile in the New York Times a couple of weeks ago. And he's still fighting.
Incidences of HIV are again on the rise now because people are thinking, well, it's manageable. I can take a pill. But they're not really thinking about the long-term effects of the side effects. Mm-hmm. People that are long-term survivors of HIV are dealing with a lot of premature aging, bone issues, and a lot of things that go along with that mileage. Mm-hmm. So this play kind of encapsulates the beginning of that and shows a glimpse into the past of just an inkling of what it was like back then.
And the power of community as well.
Exactly.
Right? It really does speak to whatever your community is.
Right.
The power of a community to do the job of the internet.
Exactly.
To do the job of the news media to get this out. I mean, there's such a beautiful, the milk scene where he's just like, he's screaming.
Yeah.
For someone to hear him.
Right, just anybody to listen. And the frustration mm-hmm. that comes out in that scene is eye-opening to people who have never experienced that kind of pain and grief before.
Well, I think our Austin audiences are lucky to have this play being produced here and at City Theater. Can you tell us a little bit about you? You're about to open. Where are you? You're opening on the 30th?
Yes, we open on Friday, June 30th.
And you run until?
July 16th.
And if people wanted to get some information, how would they visit?
Citytheater.org.
Citytheateraustin.org.
Citytheateraustin.org. So great, you guys. Thank you so much, A, for producing this work because it's very important. And B, for coming and being with us on the show. I hope I hope to come see you soon.
Thank you
for having us.
That was Lacey Gonzalez, Carl Gonzalez, Scott Papaw, and Michael Galvin, and City Theater's production of The Normal Heart, running from June 30th through July 16th at the City Theater. For more information, visit citytheateraustin.org. That is one of my favorite.
I love that song.
Favorite songs.
So beautiful.
From Ragtime. And also, how perfect for Larry Kramer could sing that song. Or we could sing that about Larry Kramer. I'm so happy that Austin and proud that Austin is doing The Normal Heart.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's been so many different productions of that recently for a reason, right? Mm. The revival on Broadway starring Joe Mantello and speaking of Jim Parsons and Luke McFarlane, mm-hmm. And the movie with Mark Ruffalo. And so it's there's reasons why this story is being told right now. Lisa, do you have anything locally that you want to chat about?
No.
No?
not really. You know, I did not do my homework. But I do want to say something because I wasn't here last week.
Uh-huh.
And it is a bit – it's too late. But I actually went to see the Revolutionists, which we had here on the show. Lovely, lovely show. And then I also went to see – what else did I go to see? Oh, I went to see
– The Dresser?
No, I wanted to see The Dresser, but I didn't get to see it. But I saw the Austin Theater Project's Bear.
Oh, nice. Cool. How was that?
That's a heavy-duty show. I knew very little to nothing about it.
It is a heavy show.
It's a heavy-duty show.
I mentor a high school student whose mom said, he wants to do his first musical, and they've asked him to audition for Bear. I said, I think I'd rather him do a Rodgers and Hammerstein.
Do Oklahoma.
Do Oklahoma. Yeah,
work your way at Bear.
Maybe you're a good man, Charlie Brown.
Right. Oh, man. So let's chit-chat a little bit about Today in Theater.
Today in Theater history.
In 1902, today is the birthday, speaking of a certain Richard Rodgers.
It is.
You've heard of him, right?
He did not
write Cats.
That's not who I was thinking of.
Oh, he didn't?
No, he wrote, he wrote certain things such as Oklahoma, Carousel, South Pacific, King and I.
South Pacific, that's weird. Yeah. I feel like I saw that on Broadway with somebody I know.
I don't know, but whoever sang the Mangoes and Bananas line, give him a Tony!
So Richard Rodgers also wrote a whole bunch of standards that are not, just Richard Rodgers himself wrote a bunch of standards that are not part of the Broadway theater.
That are a part of the American Songbook.
Yeah, which is just wonderful, wonderful songs.
Also, in 1926, birthday of funny man Mel Brooks. Okay, so let's just say it. Today is kind of a killer day for Richard Rodgers and Mel Brooks.
Yeah,
I love how I said today in theater history, and then I went straight to birthdays. Just want to point that out, that I know that that happened. Actress Antoinette Perry. And do we know who missed?
Who is Antoinette Perry?
I don't know. Miss Tony Awards. Antoinette Perry, an actress during her lifetime. We'll know her name, obviously, from the Tony Awards. This is interesting. I love this one. In 1950, censorship proved to be a problem when Michael Todd's Peep Show opened at the New York Winter Garden.
Nice.
So Michael...
I don't even know what that is.
But you like
great.
It?
Yeah.
You want to be in the lottery for it, don't
you?
Yeah,
I entered the lottery.
This reminds me of Times Square in the old days.
Right. So this legendary producer was forced to tone the review down as a result of talks with the city's commissioner and license. I just love that.
Or women wearing like open-toed shoes.
Exactly.
Ooh.
It's like the 19th.
They had a wig on.
They did.
Eyelashes extended.
Yeah. Lashes.
That was scandalous.
And an exposed ankle. But also in 1950, just to imagine being cast in Michael, you know, I just imagine all the like, ooh, I'm cast in a show. Michael Todd.
What's it called?
Peep Show. They shut us down, the fuzz. Like just the fuzz coming to shut down Michael Todd's Peep Show in 1950. Okay. In 1990, one of my favorite composers, William Finn, follows up In Trousers and March of the Falsettos with the final of the Marvin Trilogy, Falsetto Land.
So I am, I just learned today in taking a little LGBT theater quiz, I don't know anything about In Trousers.
Ooh, In Trousers is amazing.
Yeah, so the question was, what was the first one? And I said, Falsetto Land. And they went, no, you're wrong. It's a trilogy, not a duet.
I took the same quiz.
Yeah.
And I got...
That's the only one I got wrong.
I got another one wrong. I don't remember which one it was.
So the quiz we're talking about is on playbill.com. If I think about it, I'll put a link in the show notes.
Yes. So in 1990, that happened. We got ourselves Falsetto Land. And if our listeners don't know what Falsetto Land is, it's a wonderful, wonderful musical by William Finn.
Tony Award winning for 2017.
And it brings, speaking of like Normal Heart, it brings subject matter like HIV and AIDS and family and growing up and relationship into...
On that, because I saw Falsetto's...
this latest one.
Yeah.
I did as well.
And I thought, man, like when two men are singing a love song to each other... And it seems very, not to say normal, but it's not like, oh, I'll burn down the theater.
Uh-huh.
That felt like movement to me, you know, because I'm, I know it's New York and the people, blah, blah, blah. But I just felt like, God, this,
rewind 20 years, 30 years, like, imagine. And you'd be like, people would be like picketing outside.
Well, his work was highly, highly controversial for that reason.
Correct.
And it was William Finn, much like Larry Kramer, we stand at the end of Pride Month on many shoulders of great artists, and he is one of them.
Yes.
Also, in 1999, 27 years after it premiered off-Broadway at the Truck and Warehouse Theater, Tennessee Williams' Small Craft Warnings will be seen in the New York stage. So, 1999, Small Craft Warnings opened.
There you go.
Which is wonderful. And in 2002, to celebrate what would have been the 100th birthday of Richard Rodgers, there was a giant concert. Two more birthdays are Max Gordon, Gilda Radner.
Gilda Radner.
An amazing one.
And so she had a one-woman show on Broadway.
She did have a one-woman show on Broadway. So happy birthday to all
I have some more birthdays.
You
I have some local birthdays.
I have one from last week.
All right, James Burnside, happy birthday. Kathleen Brown, whose birthday is also happens to be my cousin.
Oh.
And she has done quite well with herself. And I think she just got a job somewhere in New York doing some show. Adrian Schoen. She's not a local person, but a dear friend of mine, her birthday, I worked with her in 1977 on a production of The Fantastics. Her name is Paula Grooms. Tomorrow, Samantha Bagden,
mm-hmm.
who has just moved away. Didn't they move?
Yeah.
They just had their going away party. They're moving soon.
Yep. And then Friday is the birthday of Ryan Crowder of Penfold Theater.
And also on the 25th, our 25th. Sweet and dear Nicole Shiro.
That's right.
Oh, yeah, I did see
Nicole
that on Facebook.
Nicole Shiro's birthday. Right. And we went and we ate Japanese steakhouse.
The hibachi where they do it in front of you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They throw the shrimp in your mouth?
They did, except they threw pieces of rice.
What? Were you getting married?
It's cheaper than shrimp.
That's hysterical. So happy birthday to everyone local and around. Happy, happy birthday. When we come back, we'll be talking to Keith Contreras McDonald and Zach Theater's production of In the Heights. How it must feel to go racing. Hello, welcome back. If you're just joining us, I'm Nick Mayo, joined by Offstage On Air creator Lisa Sheps.
That's me.
And special co-host Keith Contreras McDonald.
That's me.
Hello. Anyway, Keith.
Yes.
I'm going to give our viewers just a little bit of a snapshot. You are in town for what?
I'm doing In the Heights, playing Usnavi at the Zach Theater.
Wow. So if you live in Austin, you've heard Zach Theater is doing In the Heights. It's a wonderful production. I was able to see it a couple weeks ago. Selling out, having a wonderful experience. Keith. Mm-hmm. Talk about what it means to be in Austin doing this piece.
Well, it's a lot. I mean, I'm originally from San Antonio. Graduated in 2002, and
you're coming back home.
Yeah, I was like, I'll never come back. And then I got this job, and I was like, oh, I guess I'm coming back. And it's been an absolute treat. The people at the Zach are so amazing. Like the cast is so amazing, and they're mostly locals too. You know, like. The talent here is just so high now. The access to stuff. We have an incredible band that's all local. You know, all the crew and everything so professional. It's been a dream.
So Keith, for our listeners who might not know In the Heights, which would be if our listeners don't
Both,
know, let's
one
tell
person
them.
That doesn't know.
The one person that doesn't know.
There's actually three. Okay.
There's three people who don't know. Please tell about In the Heights. Who wrote
so,
In the Heights?
In the Heights is a Lin-Manuel Miranda.
What else has he written?
A little musical called Hamilton, I believe.
Cool. Never heard of it.
Keep going. And so this is the first. It's a snapshot of few days in the life of Washington Heights, sort of led by a local bodega owner and his friends and family and how they coexist on a tiny little block.
Keith, what's
in
a bodega? Well, I don't think
bodega
that's a word we
is,
use here in Austin.
What do we, corner store, I think we use here.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Gas station.
Sack and pack.
Corner store.
It's a sack
at the local sack and pack.
That just didn't work well in the lyrics, so they changed it
to
bodega.
Exactly,
to
bodega.
So, Keith, I didn't realize, I mean, this role of Usnavi, mm-hmm. There's a lot of parallels to your life, right? Coming home.
Right.
There's a theme, obviously, of home mm-hmm. within In the Heights. What has it felt like to perform this material in your home state?
Yeah, so, and we talked about this a little bit, but like, so the whole thing is like, you feel trapped on your block, right? And you really want to go and be away because you're like, I'm just here on this everyday grind. And I know I felt that way in high school. Like, I just wanted to leave. I wanted to leave so bad. And I got the opportunity to go to Juilliard and to leave. And, you know, and then, like, you get this job and you come home and you're like, oh, I love the food here. Like, I speak the cultural language of, like, how to move around. Like I said, corner store, bodega, raspa, piragua. Mm-hmm. And it's just, like, it's amazing. And so I completely understand the need for wanting to, like, get out and go. And just like you did, you've come back and made home here again. Mm-hmm. And I think that's basically, not to ruin the ending, but.
No, you haven't given anything away yet.
No. Also, what I love about this piece is the immediacy of it right now. Who would have thought, I mean, I love the piece, period, but that a celebration of Latin culture and Latin community, as we talk about the same with the gay and lesbian, bi, transgender community.
Now we have everything.
It's hard to rattle off. Puerto Rican, I felt like Donald Trump when I did that.
Dominican, Mexican, it's everything.
But also, ooh, like, what a celebration of the Latin culture this piece is.
Yeah. Latin music, Latin culture, Latin people, just everything. It's fun.
And I do want to say something about this particular production. This was directed by Michael Balderrama. And
choreographed.
Yeah. And choreographed. And it's styled, the scenic and everything is the same as Broadway. Quality is right there as well. So it's...
Yeah, the standard in the room was always so high. And I'm looking at, like, literally there are high school students in the show, mm-hmm. college students. And our director, Michael's a genius and just was like, you know, he was like, this is what we're doing and y'all all... You rise up to the occasion.
Young woman that played Nina, I forgot her name.
Christina.
Sophomore, junior
at TSU.
TSU, but what a beautiful voice.
She's amazing,
just really
Everyone's
nice.
Amazing. It's fun, like, because I interact with everyone on stage, mm-hmm. literally. And
that's the second time you've used that word.
Literally? Mm-hmm. Well, that's the
third time.
everyone.
And it's fun to, like, catch the eyes of those people. I mean, I spend time on the stoop with Christina, you know, Alicia plays our mm-hmm. Vanessa, Vincent Hooper plays the Benny, Nicholas Garza, Sonny, you know, just I have moments with all of them at different parts, including all of the ensemble people and just checking in and seeing the joy and the, like, mischievous joy at times with some. It's phenomenal.
Keith, what was some of the process? Those of our listeners who might not know, Michael Balderrama was in the original production of In the
original
Heights.
Dance captain, yeah, and then also became an integral part of the show.
What were some
time.
Of the challenges and opportunities of working with someone who has such a specific knowledge of the piece? And talk a little
it
bit about
amazing.
That.
It was amazing. He asked a lot from me. Having him, I mean, he's known it for 10 years. I knew it for 3 months. Mm-hmm. You know, I really missed the boat on this show in terms of knowing it. I didn't know it at all. I knew my audition material until I got the job. Mm-hmm. And never seen it, never heard of it. I literally bought the album after the Zach Theater called me with mm-hmm. the job. I was like, mm-hmm. oh, I should listen to the whole thing. but it, you know, and so, like, then I'm like, oh man, there's a whole finale. Like, oh my God, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I did talk to Michael at times and lean on him for, like, stuff. And, like, how did you count that? Or, like, you know, how did you feel that when you were doing it? And then also just, like, moments to, like, lean on him and just be like, this is really hard. He's like, I know. He's mm-hmm. like, and you'll get to the other side of it, mm-hmm. as we all did. And definitely. he's like, no one. One of the things he said to me early on, he's like, everyone here has no idea what it's like to play Usnavi. Mm-hmm. And I always use the joke, everyone is Usnavi in their car. Everyone could do Usnavi. You know, mm-hmm. you know, I think my mother could play Usnavi. You know, but
she could.
She probably could.
Cindy's never.
But, like, I think what he was saying is just, like, he's like, no one's going to know the struggle that you're going through in this, like, in terms of just the sort of nuts and bolts and the emotional take on you and stuff. He's like, but I do. Mm-hmm. And so that was really nice.
How are audiences, I mean, you're selling out.
Yeah.
How are your audiences responding to this piece?
They're great, man. We're closing this weekend. But the, you know, there's always, what I always say, like, before I go on, I, like, tell a few people too, I'm like, hey, today's somebody's birthday. Mm-hmm. We get a lot of, like, this is for Father's Day. This is my birthday. And so if at 2:30, I just, like, it's somebody's birthday today. So, like, I'm going to make sure, like, they decided to come hang out with me on their birthday. Like, I'm going to make it special.
That's a great thought. Mm. I like that.
That's a great
Before
thought.
Every show, I think, I literally think of the people that have come up to me. This is the fourth time I said literally.
Literally. It's literally. Yeah. I love that. I love that. That's something for us all to always remember.
I mean, we're doing 7 a week. You know, we're mm-hmm. close to the Broadway grind.
Schedule.
Yeah.
I should just add one.
Yeah.
Edward. We were doing doubles. So Saturday and Sunday, we were doing two show. And that was I had never done that before. So
that's
hard. Yeah, it was.
Well,
rewarding.
Keith, I saw this show. I'm not just being partial. You're exceptional in the show. The cast is exceptional. It's a show that Austin should be proud of. I'm glad that we are a community of artists that brought you here.
Yeah.
And I hope you'll come back.
I want to desperately
create art here and play with us. Thank you for coming and joining us, not only on the radio show, but here in our city, and for bringing the level up in such a beautiful way.
Yeah, it's a blast. I'm extremely grateful to be here at this time, like doing this show, playing this role. You know, in the bodega, I have a little journal-y thing that, you know, for business. And one of the things I wrote in there like 2 or 3 weeks ago was remember this moment and be grateful.
Hmm.
One of the things I wrote in the journal when we were doing two show was you could be waiting tables.
Oh, yeah. True enough.
You know.
Well, thank you, Keith, for being here. That was Keith Contreras McDonald and Zach Theater's production of In the Heights, running now through July 2nd at the Topfer Theater. For more information, visit zachtheater.org.
And we're just going to have time to wrap it up. But thank you for allowing me to play with you.
Thank you for allowing me to stand at the wheel. It was so foreign to have you.
Just sitting here. And Keith, thank you.
Yeah.
How rock. You're welcome to come on and co-host any old time.
Yeah.
Lisa, I have a huge respect for what you do, having just done it. It's hard work.
It's hard work. We work hard.
You do it with such ease.
We all work hard. So just remember, folks, please like us on Facebook, stitch us on Stitcher, do all that stuff. If you want to get the show right to your mailbox, offstage.
On air.
.com. And that way you'll get to hear stuff like Backstage at Offstage, which is only on the podcast.
Exactly.
All right. Well, so we're going to leave.
Thank you, Lisa. It's been a great show. You guys have a great week.
Thanks, guys.
See you next week.
Thank you.
When I sit and remember the past, though I'd rather not sit and remember the past, if I happen to sit and remember the past, I hear so many voices.
Well, the curtain has come down on Lisa's Not in Control, the musical, the story of a hapless young radio producer that has to give up control to her untrustworthy co-hosts. I'm teasing. They were great. But here we are. We're backstage. We've gone outside the stage door. We're here in the puddles of unnamed liquid next to the dumpsters. And we are joined by Keith Contreras McDonald.
Hey.
And we are also have Michael Galvin.
How's it going?
And Lacey Gonzalez.
Hello.
And Carl Gonzalez.
Hi.
And Lacey and Carl, you guys have been back here before.
We have.
Yeah, because I noticed the stains on your shoes from the last time you were here.
Couldn't get them out.
La, la, la. So I need to start with the out-of-towner right away. Keith.
Yeah.
So what's your story? Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in San Antonio, Texas. I guess
it's a little south of here.
Yeah. We spent about 2 years in San Marcos.
Uh-huh.
Who's
we?
My family.
Uh-huh.
But my mom is originally from San Antonio. My dad's originally from West Texas, but they're both arts educators, public school. And
still?
They recently retired, although they're still working like crazy.
Go for them. I love them. Already.
Yeah, a drama teacher and a band director, Scott and Cindy McDonald.
Scott and Cindy.
Yep.
I'm giving you a shout out.
And
so who's the drama teacher?
My mom.
Did you have her as a teacher?
No, I didn't.
Now, is that how you got bitten by the bug?
I got bitten because my mom was an actress before mm-hmm. she was obviously a drama teacher. And she...
In San Antonio?
Yeah, like doing mm-hmm. stuff there, yep. you know, and you're talking about a long time ago, too. But then... she wanted to get like an agent and like do it again after we were a little older. And I think I was about like 6th or 7th grade. And I was like, oh, me too. I didn't even know what that was. I just was like, I want to do that.
Mom gets it. I get it.
Yeah. That's what I felt. And she was like, well, I'll do it first. Like I did like a play or two and she's like, well, I'll do it first. And then, you know, so, then I was really like just so into the idea of having an agent and doing film and TV and being an actor. And I was reading like Meisner and Stanislavski books in like 7th grade. I was so serious in the 7th grade. I was so,
Sounds
so
like
serious.
It.
And I got work. I mean, my first commercial was like in the seventh grade, and you know, I worked all professionally through middle school and high school.
My first commercial was in the seventh grade.
Yeah.
Yes, for Astroworld.
Mine was Southwestern Bell Company.
There you go.
Doesn't exist.
Well, that's true. actually, Southwestern Bell does exist. It's called AT&T.
Yeah.
Which was an interesting. That's a whole nother story. Right. That's our business podcast. But you're a triple threat.
Something like that, yeah.
Well, I would assume so. I've seen you dance. Oh. I've heard you sing.
I appreciate
And I've seen
that,
you act.
Yeah.
So, yes. Well, we talk about triple threats here. Tell people what a triple threat is.
Well, it's someone who acts, dances. I would say a strong mover. I'm not so much a dancer. It's a person.
I saw you dance.
I did.
No,
I worked
let me
very
tell you
hard.
Something. I'm a mover. You're a dancer. So, but I tell, and so as a young man, so men there are not trained to dance. Did you take dance when you're growing up?
Nope, not really.
I did.
Kind of learned on my own.
I definitely did.
Like, yeah.
And it was because I wanted to do it. And
right.
My parents
so that's,
were like, cool, whatever.
That's so important. I tell young people here, we had some young people on the other day, the importance of if you want to make theater your career, it's important to train on all those things, even if you, like, I could kick myself in the hiney that I did not train more in dance
growing
up.
Well, and I
think,
like, with this piece in particular, you know, but all pieces, you know, because I come at it from the acting first. Like, mm-hmm. that's my bread and butter. I come at it from the language, the thoughts, the acting, like, all about. And then, you know, all the other stuff kind of falls in line because, I mean, all the genesis of all the movement, the genesis of all the singing, why you're singing in that particular moment, why the music orchestration is sort of rising with you, it all has to do with the internals, which is the acting. And
true.
So, like, that's where I definitely attack everything. So, like, and that's what my first investigation of the art came from, is from that perspective.
And that, to me, is why training in voice and dance is so important, because you want that to be able to come out of the acting.
Yeah, exactly.
And just be
I think it gets twisted sometimes, because there is sort of, like, benchmarks with singing and dancing where you're like, well, I can do this and I can sing this high. And so I think a lot of people spend a lot of time in that arena when I think, you know, more time, especially for the, like, quote unquote musical theater kids, could be spent investigating just, you know, hey, what's going on in this scene? What are you trying to do? You know, my favorite scene in the show, and it's because Alicia is so great, is Champagne in the second act.
Mm-hmm.
And we've barely worked on it ever. We were just, she knows the show like a back of her hand. She's done it 8,000 times. I've never done it. And I go in there, I open the door, clean up the bodega, and we just start. And it's different every night.
Oh, that's beautiful.
And it's just like, it's two people listening to each other, responding without a care in the world of what it's. We got sort of vague blocking at one point, and then Michael saw we were working and was like, all right, great, you'll get
do
it done.
Thing. Yeah. Awesome. So you ended up going up to New York to go to school at Juilliard.
I went to Juilliard, yeah.
Classmates of Nick Mayo.
Yep.
And did school bring you to New York and you stayed?
Yeah. So I never wanted to live in New York. I thought it was disgusting. The first time I visited, I thought it was awful. You know, I'm from here. And then I went to school there and I still hated it and was like, I can't wait to graduate and leave. And I didn't. I was there for about 2 years auditioning for tons of theater, specifically musical theater, like without a lick of real musical theater training. I'm like, you know, find callbacks for like the first national tour of Spelling Bee, singing all those crazy Chip Tolentino songs. And then after a few years of auditioning in New York, I was like, you know, I really want to do L.A. I always wanted to do L.A. I had done L.A. a little bit in high school. I had done some testing for pilots and stuff. And so I moved to L.A. in 2008, the end of 2008, something like that. And I was there for about 6-7 years, yeah. And only recently came back
now
to New
York.
Now
you're back in New York?
Yeah.
Cool. Well, that is awesome, Michael. What about you? What's your story? Do you want to pursue a professional career in theater?
I would love to.
How's your singing and dancing?
My singing, I'd say it's pretty good. I mean,
sing something for me. I'm teasing.
Yes. Put me on the spot like that. Yeah. I mean, I'm from Arlington, Texas. It's just right in between Dallas and Fort Worth.
Oh yeah, we know where Arlington is.
But went to this little high school. It's called Wansiegen High School, and the
it's
way
called
I
what high school?
Wansiegen High School.
Wansiegen. Oh, yeah. Wansiegen. Yeah. Okay. Got it. And, know who that is.
Yeah. And so the way I kind of got bit with the theater bug was a sort of way you kind of did, except my brother was in theater in high school. And I think I was in like, I want to say junior high. And, you know, I always wanted to do things my brother did, just, you know, little brother things. And I was like, man, you know, that seems really cool. And so it was like eighth grade, I think. They posted on like the choir door that they are doing Oklahoma.
Ugh. I mean, oh, great.
Yay.
Oh, no, yeah, I know. And I was like, yay, you know, finally something I can do. And I did it. And I got the part of Judd.
Awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Poor Judd is dead. Yeah.
And just.
That is my favorite song from the show.
It is. It's such a great song because he's just so sad just sitting there and singing. But pretty much after that, I was just like, I am hooked on this. And went into high school.
What part of it hooked you, like, specifically? Like, when, you know,
just
because I think some people genuinely enjoy, like, the community. They're like, I found my home. Some people enjoy the work. Some people
really,
enjoy
it, just, like, it's everything, you know, just getting to interact with that many people.
What was that thing that, like just you have a clear memory of, like, this lights me on fire?
I want to say that it probably had to be the moment I was just singing Poor Judd is Dead and just looking out into the audience. And just seeing how many people, you know, there were. And
just, like, listening
to
you.
Yeah, and just listening to you. And then just the claps and things like that. Because, you know, you put a lot of work into these things. You know, and you want
to. Some people don't. I mean, some people just
yeah.
do.
Some people
do it for fun, kind of, which is also a valid, totally great thing, yeah. too.
Lacey, I saw you made a little look over to Carl when Michael was telling that story. What
I
was that about?
I love hearing them talk. I love hearing them talk about their passion, like our actors, especially Michael, because he's very passionate about what he does.
Yeah.
And so it just really makes me feel good to see him being passionate.
Yeah. Totally saw the director in you at that point. I saw that pride. So,
yeah.
That's my little baby.
Yeah, I get mom eyes a lot, even though I don't have children. But I definitely look at them as my babies a little bit.
Well, you should talk to your husband about that.
Sorry, I think we're done. Thank you very
so,
much.
So,
we have cats.
Lacey and Carl Gonzalez have been on the show often. So one of the things I've been talking to people, especially people that have been backstage with us before, is like, what are your passions outside of theater?
At least with me, theater's, I mean, been my passion forever. Hope to truly make a living out of it. But I'm starting to get more and more into social justice.
Awesome. We need help there, especially in this state.
Yeah,
from before the election or post the election?
Everything.
Okay.
I'm just getting to the feeling like we almost weren't going to do a show unless we could do the normal heart because we... especially me, I'm starting to get a feeling like, well, if I can't use my art to change something
Good.
And to do something, then why am I even doing this? And granted, you know, I would love to do stuff like, you know, In the Heights, you know, Hamilton, all that. But it's like what...
Both of which have a social conscience, by the way.
They do, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
It's just, you know, I think that's where my passion is. Really coming out is through social justice.
Cool. I love that you found that. It's so important because so often many people, like I didn't find my social justice cause voice until my 40s.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, and that's good that you found that. So that's cool.
In Texas, it gets, I know I didn't care about it till I left, but because you get swallowed up by, you know, what's around you. And I grew up, the area of San Antonio is very white, very conservative sort of area. And you just are kind of like, oh, like, you know, just you kind of just don't want to rock the boat or cause it. You don't want to have like a giant argument at school or whatever with even your teachers
or
whatever.
Being this radio, you're not white.
No. Oh, I'm actually, well, I'm half Scottish and half Mexican.
You're a Mexican.
That's
a
right.
Mexican.
Yeah. With native, a lot of. I did the. Well, because I did the DNA test too. So it's a lot
oh, you
of
did?
Like
I
Native American.
That.
And like,
I'm afraid,
you know,
though.
So.
I have dachshund in me.
We took a little cast party on the lake the other day, so I'm off real tan.
Well,
oh,
yeah, it's good. Yeah, looks good on you. Lacey, what's your passion outside of theater?
I've really been enjoying writing. I am a contributing writer for Broadway World Austin.
Ah.
And then my sister and I are actually working on developing some scripts.
Cool. Do you write anything other than, well, you write the articles.
Yes.
Do you write short stories or poems or is it scripts?
It starts out as short stories because typically they start from a dream. I have really vivid dreams, and so I'll write down what happens. And from that, we've been able to use those to develop them into scripts.
Well, that's cool. And what are you going to do with those scripts?
We submit them to the Austin Film Festival and then the TV Festival.
So you're writing screenplays?
Yes, screenplays.
Yeah, you need to move
TV
to
shows.
Los Angeles.
No, don't. Yeah. It's awful.
It's like whenever I meet
fight
someone
the good
that
fight here.
Lives in LA, I said, "How many screenplays have you written?" Because like everybody's a screenwriter.
Yeah. I didn't write any when I was there.
I wasn't looking at you.
Yeah.
It's awful. You literally wrote some.
It is hard to fight the good fight in Austin, especially when we have a lot of budget cuts that are coming from different directions.
Well, and that's nationwide as well.
Yeah.
And we're working really, really hard as a community.
Well, it's just like I start to think about, you know, we all like a family friend is the congressman for San Antonio, Joaquin Castro, and he's coming
Castro.
In the Heights on this weekend.
Oh, awesome!
And one of the things he said when we were at a fundraiser or something, and I was telling him about the other San Antonio people that I knew that are in the business that are doing stuff, and he was like, "How do we get these people to stay?" And I'm like, I don't know. Because, like, I mean, him and his brother obviously decided to stay and, like, fight the good fight, you know? And a lot of us just said, I'm out of here. And we all end up in New York, or we all end up in L.A. or Chicago or, you know, San Francisco, kind of with like-minded artistic people. And I'm starting to think now, being older and coming back, that, like, it's really a lot of important work can be done, like where you come from. I know that kid in like rural North Dakota that's like, I just want to leave here. But it's like, man, if you fight at home, like people would listen to you because you're a homeboy. Like,
there's so much work that can be done right here, and actually, that's where one could argue that's where the real work is needed and where the real work is done. And as an artist. Yeah. It really allows you, and I will channel Nicole Shiro right now because she talks about artivism a lot, but that's social activism through our art, and we have a responsibility to do that. So I love hearing you say that, Carl.
Well, and like, so in the Heights, you know, there's that Donald Trump line. And someone asked me about it before, like, we started, and I told you I didn't listen to it, so I was like, I don't know where that is. I'm right there, like, and so it affects me directly when Benny Vince's character says Donald Trump and I on the links, and he's my caddy. You know, at that time, it was sort of just a pop cultural reference, and
it's on a whole different
president.
Meaning.
It's crazy.
I was actually curious about that. I was going to ask.
Yeah. So he does it, and he does it like, and it fits. It really does, because it's like he's kind of like, you know, it's about saying like, I'll be so wealthy that some idiot like Donald Trump would be my caddy. And so, yeah, my reaction is always like, well, that makes sense. Like,
Well, we are out of time here backstage. But so if you listen closely, you can hear the dulcet tones of Poor Judd Is Dead right now. Can you hear it? It's great. It's great. You want to sing along?
Poor Judd is dead.
I can't. That was perfect. Thank you guys for joining us backstage.
Thank you.
And we'll see you next time you're back here. Bye.
He looks like he's asleep. It's a shame that he won't keep. But it's summer and we're running.